listen to that question of the voice for a moment. What are you doing here? I wonder what's brought you here. Perhaps you're always here for a Kairos gathering. Perhaps you regularly go to church somewhere else. Perhaps you are a little surprised and maybe even uncomfortable to find yourself in a place like this with these actions and songs and prayers and things. Perhaps you're here because you love Elijah and his parents and his family. Perhaps you're here because you're seeking God. What are you doing here? These things we do, these kind of initiation rites, welcomes into community, they touch on some of our hopes and our fears and our deep stuff when we do them. I wonder what hopes and fears were caught up in your prayers as you watched Elijah getting baptized. Wonder what your hopes and dreams and fears are for your family, your friends, your young ones. Of course, those are so often actually our hopes and fears for ourselves, just bundled up with a little bit of extra love and passion. My hope for Elijah, for my own children, if I'm honest, for myself, is that as I go through life, I will continue to discover that it's more than just something to be survived or distracted from or even seized and grasped. It seems so easy to go through life doing one of those three things. My hope for Elijah and my children, and if I'm honest, myself and for you, is that we would begin to learn again that life is a gift to be treasured. It's a wonder to be awed at. That it's a mystery to be searched and curious around. And then it points to something deeper. The gift has a giver, the source of the wonder, the holiness at the heart of the mystery. A couple of weeks ago, I was chatting with Matt and Pippa and asked, why Elijah? And they joked because they liked the song. Behold, he comes riding on the clouds. Anyone familiar with that one? It's a classic from the 80s and 90s. But they also pointed to the story of Elijah in the Bible. This great man of God. This person of holiness who heard the still small voice. In our reading, we hear this prophet from the Old Testament, Elijah, setting into a rhythm that becomes a deeply rooted pathway to holiness. He's had this confrontation with the kind of religious and political powers of his day, and actually, he's just won, but then he's heard that there's a price on his head and he's in danger and he flees. And where does he flee? He flees where people have always run away to the wilderness, to the desert, to the mountain. And on that mountain, he hears the still small voice of God. What a naming for a boy. A man of power and of quietness and of seeking after God. The mountain he goes to in the desert is the place where God's people in Exodus had also encountered God, which is the place where Moses, as he was fleeing for his life, also encountered God. There's this pattern of holiness that's rooted into Christianity that in places of wildness, in places of difficulty, God is present. This was Jesus' pattern too. In Matthew 4, 1 to 11, we're told he leads the crowds of the city and separates himself in order to fast and pray and wrestle. And throughout Jesus' ministry in the Gospels, he has this pattern of separation and then engagement. This is one of those hardwired rhythms into Christian faith. Why on a baptism Sunday am I going on about this retreat and moving forward, wilderness and engagement? Well, a couple of reasons. One is because of his name, it's Elijah. It points to this heritage. But also because we are just a few days from the start of Lent. In lots of Christian churches, including ours, Lent is a part of the year where we seek to give ourselves to connection, to devotion, to worship with God again. You might be marking it with pancakes on Tuesday. You might be thinking about giving something up. Kairos, we're going on a journey together over Lent. Can you put the desert? That's it, brilliant. So we are going to be joining with other churches around the world with 24/7 prayer and the Lectio 365 series. And we're going to be exploring some of the stories of the desert fathers and mothers and looking at the examples of their lives and how they pointed to Jesus in their time and how we in our lives might point to Jesus in ours. I'm really excited about this. I first encountered some of the stories of this group of people, the Desert Mothers and Fathers, in a little second-hand Penguin Classic book that I picked up in a bookshop in my 20s. I'm a history geek. I used to be a history teacher, so I'm into all of that stuff anyway. I was like, oh, this looks exciting. And it was. The stories that are in there of devotion and adventure, of power and of struggle, caught my attention. And they are a group of people that I've gone back to again and again. Who were they? They were people living in the 3rd century AD, a group of men and women who, as they saw it become easier to become a Christian in their day because of the political changes in the Roman Empire, sought a way of holiness that would be costly to them. Now, how did they do that? By fleeing the metropolitan centres, Cairo, Alexandria, into the desert spaces around them in order to live lives of prayer and deep holiness. And as they fled to the desert to seek God, they began to change the world. People would trek out into the deserts to meet them, to talk to them, to gain from their wisdom. The level of prophetic insight and challenge they had at their time about the corruption and the compromises of their age went down in history. And groups that have sought a life of holiness and devotion have again and again gone back to their witness. And in looking at that, looked at Jesus' life and said, how might we live? The desert fathers and mothers found, like Moses, like John the Baptist, like Jesus, like Elijah, that the desert was a place of wisdom and humility. The desert was a place of prayer and testing. The desert was a place of silence and solitude, but also a place of community where others came to find them. And a desert was a place they carried with them. Now, we in Harrogate are not going to be all kind of wandering off on a hike somewhere. You will have noticed there's not that many deserts around here. But we're going to take that as a recurring metaphor over these next 40 days and wonder together, how might we seek God in the wilderness experiences, in the difficulties, in the desert type experiences of our lives, and what might we learn from these people? You can do that with us in a couple of ways. There will be daily devotionals from the Lectio 365 app, and I've got some bits of paper and a slide at the end that can tell you how to do that. At our gathered points over the next few months as Kairos, we will be telling some of the stories of these people and exploring them more deeply. Why are we doing that? Because many of us in this church have been saying again and again that we sense an invitation from God in our moment to go deeper. We sense a restlessness with where we currently are in our lives. We sense it in ourselves, and if we're honest, we sense it in our friends and our neighbours as well. It feels at this moment like there's a world longing for a deep kind of wisdom and hope again. Even if you wouldn't describe yourself as a person following the Christian faith, you may well sense that yourself. It feels at this moment like there's a longing for more. And maybe by spending Lent looking at Jesus and listening into the stories of a group that did that centuries ago, we might learn some new patterns that mean that we become those deeper wells, those sources of greater wisdom and hope for others. We've been trying this for a while. At Kairos, we've been building community for a number of years. We've been playing with prayer, prayer rooms and night and day prayer and groups trying to do this. But maybe God is inviting us deeper. I wonder if you sense that too. Jesus' advice on prayer was very simple. He said, go into your room and shut the door. Don't make it about performance. Don't make it about other people. Don't make it about stuff. Go into your room, shut the door, and seek. And that's what we want to learn to do. We're doing this not because we think we have got it together or that we're holier than anyone else. We're certainly not. We just want to seek God. For these people, the desert became to represent the idea of separation, of shutting the door, of seeking God more fully. The desert mother, Synclitia of Alexandria, noted that there are many who live in the mountains and behave as if they were in the town, but it is possible to be a solitary in one's mind while living in a crowd. We want to learn to be people who, even in a crowd, can have a depth of relationship with God that means we can offer hope and wisdom and kindness to others. In Colossians 4, we hear the Apostle Paul thinking about this, and he encourages his readers to devote themselves to prayer, being watchful and thankful. The word that he uses for devote kind of has layers of meaning around perseverance, around diligence, continuing, waiting, just keeping at it. I wonder what that word, devoted, means to you. I wonder if someone looked at your life, what they might think you're devoted to. We want to learn how to be people that are devoted to Jesus, because there's just something about him that we've found. I wonder what that stirs in you. Now, a word of kind of caution about this before we say one more thing and finish. It's very easy at the start of Lent, at the start of these type of journeys, to fall into two traps. The first is to say, oh, it's a load of nonsense, it's a load of rubbish, I'm having nothing to do with it, and just to keep, you know, the telly on and distract yourself as ever. But the second is the opposite. It's to kind of throw yourself into this so much that it becomes all about how you can achieve something. And that temptation is really prevalent in lots of different places in our world. We live in an age of life maximization, where kind of extremes of intention and action and practice and just do this for this, the kind of slot machine lifestyle is sold to us in so many different ways. An invitation to devotion is almost the opposite. It's to come close to Jesus and know that he is with you. And to hear him say, my yoke is easy, my burden is light, come with me. There's a story about one of these people, one of the earliest and most famous of them, called Anthony. And people would come to Anthony and talk to him. And one day there was a group of brothers who were chatting about some strange dreams they'd had with him. And a hunter just happened to be walking through the desert, as you do, you know, looking for some desert hares or something to shoot. And he saw Anthony talking with the brothers, and Anthony, you know, was a bit of a Christian celebrity at the time, so he was disappointed. He was like, what's Anthony doing? Just relaxing, chilling with these other people. And Anthony saw this and called him over because he wanted to teach a lesson about grace and austerity. And so he said to the hunter, pull back your bow. And so he did. And he said again, pull it further. And he did. And he said, pull it further. And he did. And he said, pull it again. And the hunter said to him, if I pull it again, it will break. And so this hermit in the desert said, so it is with God's work. If we always go to excess, we quickly become exhausted. It's sometimes best not to be rigid. And apparently the hunter went away and learned a valuable lesson, and the brothers were encouraged and all went home. We want to walk in this kind of gap between knowing that there's more and seeking for it and not being so stretched that we break. And that's a gap where God's grace comes in. Whether you've been a Christian for years or never thought about this seriously, that's a gap where God says, first, I've chosen you. I love you. Would you come with me? I said at the start, Jesus went into the wilderness. He had this experience of wrestling God in the desert. And just before that, we're told in the Bible, he was baptized in the river. And we're told in the story of Jesus' baptism that the clouds parted and a voice spoke out, this is my beloved son with whom I'm well pleased. So as Jesus was sent by the Holy Spirit into a desert, he went with the words of baptism ringing in his ear, beloved, beloved, chosen. And that's the same word that God speaks over Elijah, over my children, over your precious ones, over you, beloved, chosen, loved. We seek God not to prove ourselves or earn anything or be comfortable with ourselves. We seek God because we've heard him say, I love you and come with me. And so I invite you, perhaps just for a moment, perhaps for a longer journey, listen to the one who loves you and let him draw you close. We're going to worship a little bit more together in a moment. But first, we're going to pray. Band, would you come up and get ready? Thank you. I'm just going to read a short poem, and then we'll have a moment of quiet, and then sing again. If you like the poem, there's some copies on the table. You can take them away. Invite you just to shift slightly, get yourself as comfortable as you can in our lovely blue plastic chairs. If you would enter into the wilderness, do not begin without a blessing. Do not leave without hearing who you are, beloved, named by the one who has traveled this path before you. Do not go without letting it echo in your ears, and if you find it is hard to let it into your heart, do not despair. That is what this journey is for. I cannot promise this blessing will free you from danger, from fear, from hunger or thirst, from the scorching of sun or the fall of the night, but I can tell you that on this path there will be help. I can tell you that on this way there will be rest. I can tell you that you will know the strange graces that come to our aid only on a road such as this, that fly to meet us bearing comfort and strength, that come alongside us for no other cause than to lean themselves towards our ear, and with their curious insistence, whisper our name.